Today's daf from Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Yud Beit, and we're holding on Yud Beit at the top, but in order for us to get back immediately into the sugya, let me just remind you what we've been talking about so that we could complete the sugya once again from its beginning, starting on Yud Alav Amud Beit. We were talking about the question of being metaltel from Rishus to Rishus on Shabbos in a way that is not normal to be metaltel. So we were talking about the case of a kis shel zav, which is obviously a very strange way to carry things. And nonetheless, being as this is the normal way in which it's carried, so even though it's essentially, it would be the same idea as a woman carrying a tampon, so this would be a male that would be carrying in the same way a kis. So we said that it's not considered to be a choshev v'hotzah if you don't really need it. And the question is, what does don't really need it mean? Because if the fact is that the person, even if he doesn't need it, lahalacha, does he not need it in order to avoid soiling his clothes? So we said, the last thing we said was that things that are there only for the purpose of preventing soiling are not considered to be a choshev usage. And therefore, call it sule tinuf, loka choshev. And the last thing that we learned was a mishnah that we felt would be a proof to that in makshirin. So you see over there, you put a upside down dish on a wall to prevent the water from getting on the wall. It's not considered to be kiyutan in terms of your desire, and therefore it does not have the chashivas of the arita. Now, today we're up to midami, and we're going to attack that issue. Now, this, again, is a brilliant move on the part of the Gemara, because what's actually happening over here, as we're going to see, is that we're introducing an element of malacha that ultimately becomes a much more fundamental question that will impact all malachas and has nothing to do with the particular issue of whether it's the way that people carry things. And that is, what is the purpose of a malacha? Being as malacha has been malacha's machshevet, how do we relate to the machshevet? And that is one of the most fundamental sugyas in the Masechet. So when we start off pretending that all we're concerned about is whether or not it's a strange way to carry something, to wear it as a condom, which is essentially the kis shel zav, nonetheless, that would be considered to be carrying. But we said, okay, but it depends what the purpose is. I know. I mean, if you just want to save your clothing. Okay, so we said, again, on the surface, we're only looking at the question of logistical commons, and we ask, it's not the same. Because remember, the issue over there about the wall is whether you want the water. Over here, the issue is not whether you want the zivas, obviously. It's whether you want the protection that you're wearing. What does that have to do with what the purpose of the protection is? It's completely irrelevant. I want this kiss. But there is a case which, in fact, does address that issue. And that is the very next Mishnah. We're scrolling over here, the safe of that Mishnah Makshirin. And that is, a guy takes a kneading bowl, large bowl, his roof is leaking, he puts the reva underneath his roof, okay, and it got filled with water. So now any water that spatters out when it falls, or if he forgets to remove it in time, he doesn't pour it out, and it overflows. That's not called kiyutan, because obviously he has no interest in that. But shebetocha hareza bechiyutan. If the water is inside of it, so then if you were carrying it away and you need to lift it up from there, then it's considered to be b'chiyutah. Now, this areva is very similar to a kis shel zav. It's there in order to protect your carpet from the water that's falling on it, just like the kis shel zav is to prepare to protect your clothing. And it seems over here that it is considered to be b'chiyutah. So therefore, answering the two brisas in claiming that it's the question of whether it's during the time that you need it or you don't need it, that's not a good answer. But the real answer is a much more profound answer. And that is that in all of the dinim of Shabbos, we have a very fundamental machlokas. And that is, how do we relate melechas machsheves to a particular circumstance? And that is the circumstance of melechasha einat tzricha legufa, where I do not need this melecha, now, gufa, Bepashtus could mean, I do not need this malacha for the original purpose for which the malacha was used in the Mishkan. So therefore, when it would come to Hotza'ah, let us say, if I want Hotza'ah, the classic cases later on, I want the Hotza'ah only to get something out of my Rishus. I don't want the hotza'ah to get something into the other issues. In a case like that, I would say, the Zaptosis understands it much later in the Masechet, that the Mishkan, the Malach of Hotza'ah, was to throw something required in the other place. So if a person would throw a needle to one of the people that was working on something in the Mishkan from the Rosh HaSayachar over Rosh HaSarabim, so that would be the Malach of Hotza'ah. But Hotza'ah, the Malach of Hotza'ah, to say, I just want to get something out of my house, that's not a creative act of Hotza'ah, which is similar to the Mishkan. Rashi, because of this sugya, has a much more general concept of malacha she'ena tzricha legufa. What Rashi says is that the nature of the Mishkan's malacha is fundamentally creative, meaning that I am dealing with life in a way that adds complexity. And anything that I have to do, which is only to reassert a situation that was there from before, is not considered to be a malacha. So as far as I'm concerned, I would much rather not have to worry about zivas at all, right? All that I'm trying to do is to protect myself from something that is attacking me that I want to have nothing to do with. Therefore, in the case, the classic case later on, which is to remove a corpse from a house and to bury the mace. And you say, well, I mean, obviously you want to get the mace to the graveyard, right? No. Because I would much rather that the guy didn't die in the first place. As a matter of fact, I wouldn't mind getting rid of mortality in general. So you don't call something like that a creative act. That is a reaction to something which is just awful anyway, and all I'm trying to do is to assert that it's possible to live even under these kind of circumstances. How in the world would you call that the Vayichulu HaShamayim Va'aretz, and this is the equivalent of the Malachas that was done during my Sibarashis, which is completely and totally antithetical to anything creative? Therefore, Rashi says the meaning of Malach Hashena Tzrich Lagufa, which is a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, we do not apply that requirement for absolute creativity to the Malachas of Shabbos, would be a true over here as well. According to Rabbi Shimon, who says, no, we do apply that. And if it is not absolutely creative, you are not chayav on Shabbos. So therefore, there's no problem. The Braita that says that Azov is chayav for going out with his kids, that's going on to Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that even a non-creative act is nonetheless considered to be chayav because Malach Hashena Tzrich Lagufa is chayav ben. Masha'enke in the Braita that says that your potter on a kishal Zov, it has nothing to do with the particular circumstances over here. It's the question of the very fact that it's there in order to eat sule would mean I'm just trying to get rid of something I don't want. Okay, getting on now. So this is just an aside that the Gemara managed to introduce, in a very sneaky way, the fundamental issues of Shabbos, specifically in terms of Hotza'ah. This is true later on also, Legabe Hotza'at Hamet. And this is a vast expansion of the normal way that people deal with the issue of Malach HaShena Tzrich Legufa, as you can see, in which it's not a question of just whether this is the primary meaning of how the Malach was designed. It has to do with the underlying nature of Malach, which is similar to the concept of Hotza'ah itself, that touches on the underlying nature of Shabbos itself in creating this idea of a malach. Okay, the next thing that we had over there is that you have to be very careful about going out of the house before Shabbos if there's anything on your begadim because you may end up carrying it on Shabbos and not realize that Shabbos has already begun. So Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel, despite that, if you're wearing tefillin, you are allowed to go out even wearing your tefillin because you will not forget that you're wearing tefillin by definition. Because since Rabbi Bar Avuna said that Chayav Adam L'mashiv Shifilin Kol Shabbos, you're constantly touching your tefillin. And we learn that out from the tzitz because it's a Kal V'chomer. The tzitz says, Ahav on the Rosh of the Kohen Gadol, which only had the word Kodesh L'Hashem. So there was one mention of Yudke Vavke in there. And the Torah says, V'ayam Mitzcho Tamid. It's got to be on his Metzach, on his forehead at all times. Or what is that? Why repeat it again on his forehead if we know where it was supposed to be? The point is it has to be on his brain. He cannot ever be unaware of it. So tefillin, sheish b'maskarot, harbe alachat kama v'kama. Imagine how many times we write the Shem Hashem in the parshas at tefillin. So, of course, we have to be very, very makbid. Hilkach mitkar dachilu. We don't worry about his forgetting about wearing tefillin. Tanya, Chananya omer, a general rule would be that if you are going to be going out anytime during Shabbos, then before Shabbos is Chal, you should check all your pockets to make certain that there's nothing in them, which comes from this Mishnah as a generality. And that's the best way to avoid the don't go out with X and don't go out with Y and don't go out with Z. And therefore, it says Rabbi Yosef, yes, That way, you have one very central anhaga that includes all of the Mishnayos about the various things in the Din of Avodah Zarah. This way, you avoid the whole issue. Okay, there were two ways of understanding the very ambiguous next piece of the Mishnah. Because what the Mishnah says, lo yafala et kela, velo yikra lo or haner. Now, it is not clear at all whether that's one statement, do not delouse your clothes or read lo or haner, or is it two completely different issues? Do not delouse your clothes, because you might kill the louse. And furthermore, do not even read a book, lo or haner, which had nothing to do with the lice. So Ibailo, how do we read it? Lo yafala et kela, even by yom, because maybe you'll kill the louse. That would be going according to Rabbi Eliezer, because that would mean, remember that even though we said before that we had a machlokas about whether gazrina gezer legezer legabe, that was only legabe hotza, because it's a special relationship to hotza. But in general, we did not have anybody that said we would be gazrina gezer legezer. And therefore, over here, if it's not an iser deraisa to kill a louse on Shabbos, so why would we be gozer not to delouse your clothes? Maybe you'll kill them. You wouldn't be over on an iser if you killed them anyway. So then this must be going, alibi Rebbe Eliezer, the Tanya Rebbe Eliezer Shita, is that if you kill a louse, you might as well have killed a cow. What's the difference how small it is? It's still considered to be a birya and you're chayev. And then we would read the next part. And furthermore, there's another gzera loikra la'araner. That's because maybe he will end up turning the fire up a little bit so he can see better. Or maybe they all are meant to be read together. Do not be mefala kelecha or read a book, both because shema yate. Now just let me mention for a moment over here the important question about whether the kisser of the killing of a kina, what the din would be legabe that question. And this is a very important point. The way that the Torah defines the malacha, again, in the Mishkan, of killing something, would be, where do we kill? Well, we have to get the skins. The Torah said, orot elim ma'odamim, which means we would have to be shochet elim in order to get their skins. So then the question is, how similar to Elim does the Mishkan's Melacha define the Is of Ariga? So the simple meaning, again, is that it has to be something that reproduces. If it reproduces sexually, like an ayil, so then you're usher to kill it. If it doesn't reproduce sexually, so then you don't have to kill it. Now, as we know, just about everything that we know about on Earth does reproduce sexually, and it's not absolutely necessary, but they certainly are not spontaneously generated. That's for darn sure. But this is something that became clear only in relatively recent times, remember. Furthermore, it's actually completely irrelevant. And let me explain to you why. More so than in general, that the question of how things appear on a primitive level is what defines the halacha, which is the general din that we spoke about when we were talking about the times back in Brochus and mentioned to the Chazanish and the question of Chilosif ala Trifot Bano and so on and so forth, that a sophisticated relationship to the nature of reality has nothing to do with Shabbos. And we only are concerned with the most immediate emuna, that is to say, the way that a primitive connectedness to the earth would lead you to conclude how it is that you are present. Here we run into a different question. I'll show you where we run into it. When it comes to the idea of fleas, the question over here is, what is a kina? And there's a big machlokas over here in the Shittas of Tosfos and Rashi. Is the kina a flea, or is the kina a louse? What is the difference? So again, in terms of the primitive view of the Gemara, the difference is that the flea is generated out of the earth, whereas the kina is generated out of sweat. And who cares? Who cares? Because for some reason, we paskin that killing a flea is usher, even though the belief was that a flea is not sexually generated. So what's the difference between a flea and a kina? If you're telling me it has to be similar to an ayil doesn't grow out of the ground. An ayil, it reproduces sexually. So how do we explain that? The Rambam throws in his description of these things that the kina is not considered to be a birya. That means it does not evince signs of real life. So in other words, what we do in terms of the way that we relate to things, the difference between an ayil and a jumping flea is very small. What do I care how it reproduces? That's not what's important to me. What's important to me is that an ayil jumps around and it kicks and it does things and it's active and it seems to really be part of that special quality, which is life. I mean, plants are also alive. But we don't view them as being alive in the same way that animals are alive. Why not? Why don't we view them as being the same? Why do we make this thing in our minds that the animal kingdom and the plant kingdom are so fundamentally different if they're all basically part of life? So obviously we have a different sense of a living being when it comes to the activities of life, the creativity of life, which is evinced in a flea. It bounces about and it's very chutzpahdik and it tries to get where it's going and so on. Mashenka and Akina just sort of hangs around, you know, and it's a parasite. Doesn't do anything. So because of that, we don't see it as a birya. This is the thing that is important for us to understand. Now, everybody saw eggs of Akina, obviously, on the hair. So how in the world would people think literally that those aren't? Well, maybe they thought that's the way the Akina evolves. I don't know. But the important point is that as a sitting around parasite doing nothing, it simply does not evince the same signs as active life. Okay, so therefore we don't consider it to be a birya. The question about whether that is an important distinction or not, that's a machlokas. And therefore we said it depends who you hold like over here. And if you hold like Reb Eliezer, who says we don't care about that, the point is the Torah said not to kill living beings, this is a living being. And because of that, it would be not a gzera legzera. So let's see now, says the Gemara. Since it says in a braita, ein polin ve'ein korin la'or haner, which seems to be definitely saying, by repeating the ein, that it's much of a one statement, ein polin ve'ein korin la'or haner. So that seems to be saying that it's only la'or haner. Okay, but it's not really a bigger proof than the Mishnah. I mean, you can parse it. You could say ein polin, period, at any time. Ve'ein korin la'or haner. So that's not much of a proof. Okay, let's take a look at this braita. Ain't polin la'or haner, ve'ein korin la'or haner. This spells it out 100%. And elu min halachot she'amru ba'aliyat Hananya ben Chizkiya ben Garon. And these were some of that famous story that we're going to see later on in the next Mishnah, where Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel took a vote. And this was one of the issues that were discussed over there. And over there it said, Beferish that Shema Minat Tavayu are because of the problem of Shema Yateh, and there's no problem of delousing in the daytime. Om Rebbe Yon Om Shmuel, but this is not only when you say reading, even to use a candle in order to see the difference between your clothing and your wife's clothing, we're also afraid that you're going to want more light. Says Rava, yeah. That's talking about these unisex idiots in L.A. That's the guys that live in B'nai Mechuza. We can't tell the difference between male clothing and female clothing. But normal people, the B'nai Chakliata, where people do work, you know, and they've got a dress for the job. They can't manage to sit there like a bunch of princed up, ridiculous unisex. So over there, of course, you can see right away what's a male clothing and what's a female clothing. And this is not a general look. And the truth is, even in Mechuza, I mean, it's only the older woman, basically, that would wear clothing that you could really think is a man's clothing. I mean, but, you know, a girl definitely wants to look very feminine. And the Yalda Mida Yadia, Tana Rabbana, you're not allowed even during the week to de-louse your clothes in Erish HaSarabim because it's disgusting. And you do not do things that are disgusting. This is Bibnei HaKavod just for passer-byers. You don't do vomiting in public. Even in places where this was more or less a norm to be able to clear your stomach and have room for more food or whatever. But this is Mipnei HaKavod. That's the vomitories of the Romans. Tana Rabbanan. Someone who is being mefala et kelav. And we said now you can do that. So molel v'zorek, what you do is you can roll the louse between your fingers and weaken it. And therefore it won't be in a good enough shape to re-get on you. But you have to be careful not to go straight out and kill it. Whereas Abashol says you can take it and you can throw it away, but you cannot be molel it because, again, Abashol is going a little bit of Eliezer, according to Moshitas. That's how Rashi learns because of that. He was gezer not to be molel. Omrevun alachamol v'zorek, v'zel kvodo, v'afilo b'chol. The correct way to do things is not to squish something, even if it's not Shabbos. It's much more mechubad to weaken it and to throw it away. Rabba used to kill them. Reb Sheshes. This is a question whether it's talking about on Shabbos, we're talking about on Chol. Rashi learns we're talking about even on Shabbos, that it's mutter to kill l'chatchila on Shabbos a louse. And this is how we paskin, actually. You're allowed to kill them. Rav Sheshes would kill them. And Rava would throw them into a bucket of water. No, sorry, mosquitoes are very active. And Rav Nachman said it like it really is. Rav Nachman told his daughters, look, I don't want you to just kill them. I want them to suffer. I want to hear them screaming. I hate them. So Ketolin, kill them and let me hear them scream. Ashmin li kala desanvati. I love it when my enemies have a rough time. Yes, that's much more my feelings about these things. Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, you're not allowed to kill a louse, according to Beit Shammai, whereas Beit Hillel says you are. There are a lot of things that you cannot do, according to Beit Shammai, because of the fact that the Navi says you have to be Shomer Shabbat mi mitzoch hafeitzech midaber davar. You're not allowed to go after your needs that require interaction on a business level on some way in order to get your things done, and that includes even in mishat chinat atinokot le'arais. You can't arrange for a marriage, and you're not allowed to arrange for a private teacher for your child. Lo atinok lamdo sefer or lelamdo umanut. You can't teach him not Torah. You can't teach him you can't teach him a skill. Ein menachamim avelim, ein bevakrim cholim b'shabbat. Things that are not in the spirit of Shabbos would be usher l'daber davar. So if you're going to come in to be Menachem and Avil, you're going to have to speak things that are not Shabbistic, and you're going to end up being mitzta'er. And that's not correct, so says Beit Shammai. Beit Hillel says all of the above is mutter. Why? Because the pasuk says, mimitzoch chafetzecha, your own needs. But if they're needs of mitzvah that the Torah wants you to do, so to be meshadech your children, to teach your child, to teach him how to be a car mechanic, all of that is a mitzvah. And because of that, you can engage a Rebbe on Shabbos, you do go into Bibavakar Achela on Shabbos, even though you're going to be speaking things that will cause you tsar. However, we change it a little bit to what we say in order to avoid making it something that is the same, because remember, we're not allowed to pray. Normally, Bikur Cholim consists of coming in and saying a tefillah. So on Shabbos, we don't make these personal prayers. And therefore, Tanur Rabbanan Nichnas Levaker Et Achole should say, look, it's Shabbos, so I can't daven for you. So Shabbati Milizok. But I sense that refuah is coming soon. Now, this leaves the person in a state, perhaps, of sensing that, what a shame it's Shabbos. If it weren't Shabbos, the guy would be able to daven for me and things would be much better. Rabbi Meir says, therefore, the thing to say is that Shabbos itself, Yecholah Yishit Rachim, Shabbos itself has the power to bring rachamim on you and to make you feel better. But you have to know how to treat Shabbos if you're going to feel that way. And that's up to you. Rabbi Yehuda says, you can say in general, HaMakom Yerachem Alecha V'Alchole Yisrael, whereas Rabbi Yossi says, that's not the best way to say it, because then you're separating between the individual and the rest of Klal Yisrael. It's better to say, HaMakom Yerachem Alecha B'Toch Chole Yisrael. Shevna Ish Yerushalayim would say, when he came in on Shabbos, he would say Shalom. And when he left, he would say, Shabbati Milizok Rifu Akruva Lavo, V'rachamav merubim shivtu b'shalom. So he started and ended with shalom. Have a good Shabbos, rest, feeling that everything is fine. The important thing is that overall in the world on Shabbos, there's a sense of sukkah shlomo. That is what you want to be part of, and that itself will lead you in to become better. Tosus has the incredible point of asking why in the world we daven for things at all. This is a total waste of time. Since we paskin on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippurim, the Gzar Din for the whole year. So whatever the Gzar Din is, that's what it is. What are we wasting our time asking God to be merciful and so on, right? So, amazing question. So Tosfos says, maybe it's talking about Shabbos Shuvah between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. But in Achinami, all other times, what's the point of davening? But the other answer that Tosfos gives is that Aliba de Reb Yitzchak, you recall, it says that Yofet Tzakala Adam Ben Lifnei Gzardin Ben Liachar Gzardin, and that there's always a point of Tzaka, and that our relationship to time is pretty screwed up anyway, so don't worry about it, and just daven. And it's all taken into consideration, and it's good. Okay. Anyway, come on, Oz, Hoda Amir Rebbe Chanina, Mish Yesh L'Chola B'Toch Beito. If you have someone that's ill, chas v'sholem, you should pray for him together with all of Klal Yisrael. That's like Rabbi Yossi, obviously. Furthermore, Rabbi Chanina said, you should know that even though it's such a big mitzvah to be Menachem Avelim and to be Mevaker Cholim, it was only with great koshi. The Chachomim were matir because they felt it was so important, but it was a very hard thing to do. So be careful in how you do it. You shouldn't come to be mitzvah on Shabbos as much as possible. Omar Rabbi Barbachana, Kiavasina Masayed Rabbi Lazar, we would go, and we did daven. So sometimes he would say, this was not on Shabbos, sometimes he would say, HaMakom Yifkotcha L'Shalom. And that he spoke in Lashon HaKodesh. And sometimes he would say, Rachmana Yatkirinach L'Shalom, which was in Lashon Arami. Ask the Gemara, but I thought you're not allowed to daven Lashon Arami, because we learned that Lo'olam HaYishal Adam Tzorchah Lashon Arami, then Rabbi Yochanan said, if you do that, you should know that the Malachi Asharis who bring the tefillahs into the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they will not pay any attention to you because they don't speak Aramaic. Tosfos says, what the heck is that supposed to, what do you mean they don't speak Aramaic? They don't speak anything. I mean, if they can telepathically understand what's in your brain, why would they have to understand Aramaic? It's ridiculous. He says, I don't know. But anyway, I mean, and the obvious meaning, as most of the Mefarshim explain, is that they don't speak Aramaic is exactly what you say to somebody who insists on speaking in English when everybody's speaking Lashon HaKodesh. You say, well, I don't speak English. So if you're speaking Aramaic, which is the most broken down, similar to Lashon HaKodesh language, it's almost as if you're going out of your way to bedafka not speak correctly. You know the anger that you feel sometimes when you go into the kind of laning where the guy's mispronouncing everything, and so on. You don't have any idea. It's barely Hebrew. But you sense there's some kind of relationship. That's the type of thing that the Malachi Asharis are not interested in listening to. So because of that, what it means is that there's not going to be any response to your tefillah. But anyway, because there's no bringing it into the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Obviously, everyone asks over here the kasha that every teenager would ask immediately. What is this? Malachi Asharis have to do with the price of eggs in China? After all, I mean, you're not even allowed to be mityaches to an angel, and anybody who believes that chas v'sholom you're supposed to talk to. I mean, that's why we don't say those horrible slichas that talk about malachi rachamim, because they mislead people into thinking that you can actually talk to these malachi rachamim and so on. And some say it's mamish, it's like avodah zara, it's literal avodah zara. So how in the world would we care about these malachi asharis? Now, obviously, the nature of malachim means here what it means all the time. The nature of malachim are messengers. And in that sense, messengers are simply wires carrying something. You're going to tell me that if I need to fix my internet connection, and without that, I'm not going to be able to hear the tevilas and the shul, that I'm chas v'sholom, I'm sitting there worshiping the internet connection. And that's what a malach asharis is. It's a mode of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's activity within the Bria. But since the malach asharis is the most intimate, and therefore is not responsive to a direct sivoy, but is essentially an AI, and that's what makes it a malach asharis, as opposed to a normal malach. A normal malach is a direct but. It has an application. This is what you do. A Malach HaShares is an AI that has to be able to understand what will be required. So therefore, we speak about it as if it's volition, even though it isn't volition. Even though it's not that you're going to be able to talk to a Malach HaShares to persuade them to do something, Chas V'Shalom. So the idea over there is that's also those who are matur saying that Slicha about Malachi Rachamim, Achnisu, you're not talking to them. You're just saying, like Rava would say to the animals that were carrying the dirt of Bavel, you know, Rutsu, Lazos, Ritzon, Avichim, Shabbat, and that kind of thing. Okay, I mean, it's still very misleading, yeah. Okay, anyway, why then did he speak in Aramaic if you're not supposed to pray like that? And we're talking about praying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should respond. That was during the week, not on Shabbos, that Hashem will respond. You should know that when you're together with a sick person, you're in the presence of the Shekhinah, because we can learn from a pasuk, as Rav Hanan quoted Rav, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu supports the chole, so to speak, in person. Tanya Namiachi, somebody's coming in to be bevakra chole, is not allowed to sit on a chair. And he's certainly not on a bed. This is talking about a case, again, we pass this halacha, but it's talking about where the chole is on a stretcher. He's on the ground, big ground level, basically. If the chole is in a bed, in a hospital bed or something like that, obviously you could sit on the chair. You have to sit there and you sit on the ground or you find some kind of low bench to sit on because you're in the presence of the Shekhinah and you cannot sit higher. And how do we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Zanat HaChole? He literally sustains him from inside and is present in every bodily function. The next thing that we said is do not read La'or HaNer. Says Rabbi, this does not depend on the circumstances of that lamp. It could even be in a location that you'll never even reach it. Maybe it's two times your height, you know? Even if it's two marda'ot, I don't care if it's on the 10th floor of a skyscraper across the street. You cannot use that even though you won't get it. But lo yikra is lashon yachid. One person, mashma that two people would be allowed to. Is that true? It says in a brayta lo echad velo shnayim. Amar Rabbi Elazar lo kasha. In the Mishnah where it says that you can have two people, that's talking about where they're both reading the same thing. Kan ve'inyan echad. In the brayta, it's talking about people reading different things. I'm not going to be paying attention to you if you decide to tilt the lamp. I'm not going to notice it. But if we're reading together, of course I'll notice it. From here we paskin that if you tell another individual to be careful and keep an eye on me to make sure that I will not tilt, so then you are allowed to be kari la oraner because you have a shomer. That seems to be clear from the sugya. There's furthermore a question about whether bechalal this applies to what we call ner. We call these what are called ptilot, really, in the Gemara, where the wax is solid around the ptil. The whole thing is basically a ptila. Whether bechalal, there's no shema yata over there, because, I mean, it doesn't make any difference, like in an oil lamp where you pull it out and you can make differences in the amount of light that you get. You can't do that in a normal wax candle. And because of that, really, Mi'ikra Adin, it would be mutter to read by a wax candle, except for the Mogen Avraham, I think it is, who says that it's better not to. It's better to be machmer, right? which the Mishnah Berurah holds. It's better not to, but it's a better idea. So certainly, if together with this idea that you can have somebody keeping an eye on you, there would not be a problem, halakha l'maisa. Omer Rav Huna, if you're sitting in front of a big fire, you made a Madurah, so then even if you've got 10 people there and they're all reading the same thing, it would still be us, or why? Because you don't see very well. You're sitting far apart from each other, and you've got these sudden udim that spring out, and it's hard to see. Over there, he can't be watched properly. Omar Rava, but a person who would never be the kind of person who would himself go and take care of the lamp, even if it was Bechol, and he's an Odom B'choshev, and he's certainly not going to come to do it on Shabbos. So therefore, there's no question that it would be mutter for that kind of person. The Isser L'chatchila was the type of lamp and the type of individual, low plug where that lamp is, where the individual is. It's not that the low plug is any person or any lamp, obviously. Meitve. Lo yikra lo aner shemiyateh, and Rebbe Shmo ben Elisha was certainly an Adam Gadol. He said, okay, but I can do that and I will not come to tilt the lamp. After all, am I not as great as Shlomo HaMelech, who said the same thing? And of course, Pamachat Karao Bikesh Latot. There he was, and he was about to turn the lamp, and he said, oh my God, I just realized I was about to be B'chalal Shabbos. Show you Omrim lo yikra lo aner. Reb Nosson says, no, that's not the story. He did tilt the lamp on Shabbos, and he was chayav to bring a korban. And he wrote down, even in his personal notebook, Ani Yishmael ben Elisha kariti v'iteti ner b'shabbat, and I was B'chalal Shabbos. L'kishi b'ne beit ha-migdash, I hereby am committing myself to bring a big, fat chatas. So you see that even in Adam Gadol, there is a need to not read. Amar Rav Abba, that's different. Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha never treated himself with any kind of chashivas. When it came to Torah, he treated himself as the simplest person. And he was meisim atzmo divrei Torah kehedyot, like the biggest simple person there could possibly be. By the way, my grandfather, Zatzal Rav Ruderman, had a beautiful pshat in why does it say chata shmena? What's wrong with just bringing a chatas? What do you add, my nice big fat chatas? It's like it just doesn't seem to be part of the requirements. It's a beautiful pshat. The emes is that even though the chatas is mechaper, remember that the actual derech of kapara is that after you're mechaper, you bring a korban oila for ritzui. Moshe l'mad over daima, like the Gemara says, it's like whenever. That's why we always bring the chatas first, then we bring the oila, because first we need to restore that there should be a kapara, and then we can be meratzah to set the relationship back. So over here, in order to be koveya that chiyav, said, okay, so the normal chatas will be mechaper. I'm going to bring a nice big fat chatas so that the extra amount is going to be the equivalent of the oila that I would have brought, and therefore, I mean, look, I don't have a base. I mean, they should do it today. So in terms of not, chas v'sholem, making a neder that I'm not going to be able to fulfill, so it'll be a chatas shmena. Okay, the question is, when you say you don't read, would you be allowed to? We said before, you can't even use it to see the difference between your clothing, male, female clothing in certain places. How about if you're working for someone, are you allowed to check the silverware and before you put it out and the glass to make sure it's clean? So one brisa says, yes, the servant can. And the other brisa says, no, a servant cannot check. And that's not a problem. The brisa that says that you cannot is referring to a permanent butler. And that kind of person is very nervous. He needs to do things right. Another guy, the other writer is referring to a manpower replacement worker who really doesn't care very much. You know, so he's there to do his job, but like, he's not going to get fired. If he's fired, it doesn't matter to him. So that's a shamash ena kavua. He's not going to be that bedakdek. Or you could say both are talking about a shamash kavua, and it depends what kind of lamp we're talking about. If you've got an oil lamp, so then of course we are worried. And the other bright that it says you can is talking about a kerosene lamp, and a kerosene lamp stinks if you start playing with it, and it's unlikely that he's going to play with it. Okay, yes, the more, but suppose let's take the best part with the worst part. You have a beautiful oil lamp, but you have a shamash that doesn't really care that much, and he's not kavua. What would you say the din is then if you were going to be able to split up the brightas according to what type of lamp it is? Says Rav, the din is that actually he's allowed to, you know? But we don't say that in public. Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba says, no, you could say it in public. It's absolutely the halacha for everybody. If he's a temporary replacement, then he's allowed to use it. Now, Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba, who said that that's the halacha, once came to visit Rav Asi, who held that that's not the halacha, and he was there on Shabbos, and Rabbi Yirmiyahu had his guy, his valet, who obviously in the house of Rav Asi was temporary, whatever he would be doing. And so his valet gets up and he uses the oil lamp that was on the table in Rav Asi's house to check the silverware. So Rav Asi's wife got so very upset. She goes to Rav Asi, says, you never do that. Marlo Avidachi, nice when they used to call a husband Mar, right? Marlo's Rav Asi said, no, it's okay. Don't get angry at him. He's going according to his master, who says that you're allowed to, and therefore there was not a problem.